My name is Mary Wilson. I am interviewing Billy Watts and Carrie Kirtley on September 25th, 2020. Yes, I have the right year. And Billy and Carrie, have you introduced the church where you pastor? And if you would, maybe give us some background on how the two of you came to be co-pastors at this church.
Well, Carrie and I could probably say it in one voice because we have such similar backgrounds. So Carrie, jump in as I talk, and I'm Billy. So we were at a Methodist church together in Burney as I was a member leading women's ministry and Carrie was children's director. Oh, so, you know, I was not on staff. I was volunteer status. And so we knew each other and interacted, but not really closely.
We did not know each other that well because my time was mostly with children on Sundays and hers was mostly with women on Wednesdays.
Right, so, right.
So, and then I left. My husband was transferred to Dallas with AT&T from San Antonio. And I went to seminary. That was a dream of mine. And so I graduated in 2013 and oddly enough was appointed back to First Methodist Burney.
Is that right?
Yeah, and now Carrie, tell where you had gone in the meantime.
Was that at Perkins?
Perkins, yes. Okay. Uh-huh. So Carrie?
So I had originally answered a call way back in 1997 or something. I went to seminary in Austin for one semester, but I had five children at the time, and I realized that was probably not the right time. So I postponed it, and then fast forward 20 years, and I'm working at Burney Church, and I still think will I ever get to seminary again? I don't know, but I did end up in seminary at Perkins. I started in 2015, and right as Billy was finishing up, I think, around that time.
I finished in 2013, so.
Yes, and I left Burney Church right a few months. I knew she was coming, but I left the church work there because I was, you know, doing other things. And so anyhow, I then ended up back in San Antonio for my internship. We skipped a part, but Billy was then working at Travis Park United Methodist Church, and I did my internship at Travis Park United Methodist Church.
So at some point, Billy, you went from the church in Burney to Travis Park.
Okay. Yes, and that's a whole story in and of itself. 3 years as associate in Burney, speaking a message of loving inclusiveness. Mm-hmm. And getting a little pushback at the end, along the way.
And one of the reasons why I left the ministry in Burney was, I was really called to start a PFLAG in Burney. And I knew Billy had talked about that as well, but in the interim between working in Burney and going to seminary is when we started a PFLAG in Burney. I knew I probably couldn't keep my job as children's ministry director and do that as well.
Really?
So it was really interesting. I remember the conversation, and Carrie probably does too. We're talking on the phone and I said, well, when I come back, you know, I really want to start a PFLAG because as a parent of two gay sons, mm-hmm. When my oldest son was not even coming out, but I knew, and I had nowhere to go and nobody to talk to. So I had to go to San Antonio, and knowing there were other parents like me that needed a place to go and talk and learn. Carrie and I are talking, and I was like, I want to start PFLAG in Burney. And Carrie says, well, I want to start PFLAG in Burney. Luckily there was a Sunday school class, a progressive Sunday school class in Burney that wanted to be part of that. And so it was just, you know, it evolved. And we actually were able to have our meetings at the church. All hell broke loose. And we ended up leasing the space, so to speak, so that the church wasn't, you know, allowing it. They weren't paying for our air to breathe. We took that burden away from them. And we couldn't use the address of the church, but we could meet there. in an off building, you know, and that was that was the beginning of a lot of the turmoil. But, you know.
So how did that feel to you personally? Because you both had great connections and deep roots in that congregations. So what was that like on a personal level?
Painful. I mean, it was,
yeah,
it was so painful first to have to make the choice to leave some of the families that I had raised, helped raise their children, because I knew the bigger picture wouldn't fare well. And it was just painful to be there and to see folks that I love, not necessarily against us, but not getting it, not standing alongside us like I thought they might. It was very alienating. And I know Billy experienced some of this, but to me, the day I realized, you know, how deep it ran was going to a coffee shop with two of my children, on one of their birthdays. And this older couple who would have done anything for me in children's ministry. Every Sunday morning we talked at coffee hour. I mean, when I walked in and saw them, I hadn't seen them in a while. And I walked up to the table where they were sitting and both of them put their heads down and wouldn't even look at me. And I thought, this isn't really happening. And so I went and sat down with my kids and they were like, Mom, what happened over there? And I said, I'm not sure. So when I left, I got up and went back to the table to say goodbye. Same thing. Table got silent and their heads dropped. And I thought, wow, this really happened. I mean, and I experienced a lot of people just kind of walking the other way. People who normally wouldn't do that. And it was very, very painful. And I thought, where is the love of God in this? You know, where is, it blew me away.
And mine was being on staff. And of course, you know, part of my responsibility was preaching occasionally. And I had a deep relationship with the people. I actually think I was brought back to Bernie, and this is the pastor saying this, and let me be clear. He said, you can say things I can't because of the relationship I had with the people. And there was no secret among anybody where I stood, not from the bishop, not from the DS, not from the pastor. And yet at the end of the day, you know, I had to take the heat for it. And I'm going to tell you, it broke my heart. They broke my heart.
Yeah.
And luckily, you know, I think we left on a good note. Most of them never knew how badly they broke my heart.
I'm so sorry.
People had left the church and were quite vocal sometimes about why. And I was then, of course, in the Methodist system, you know, you're appointed to another church. And through some conversations, I was appointed then to Travis Park, which is was what they call a reconciling church in the Methodist church, which is where I said from the beginning, appoint me there. This is where an inner city church, this is where I'm made for it. But anyway, so I landed there for a year. Then they had a change there too, with the pastor retired and somebody else came in just as Carrie was coming on, you know, to be an intern. And I felt like with a new pastor coming on, again, the scale tipped to where I didn't think that I was going to be as used there as maybe my passion was calling. And so, I left.
And I'm sorry.
This was in 2017. I'd been there 1 year, ordained in 2016, and was at Travis Park, you know, for 1 year, at Bernie for 3 years. And I'm getting too long in this story, but in the interim, as Carrie and I, now she's at Travis Park as an intern. The United Methodist Church is going through, you know what, as a denomination, determining where they're going to stand. Carrie and I knew she was in process to be a deacon. I was ordained.
Yeah.
And we both knew that there was a line in the sand, and I went in saying I would fight for inclusion. And I knew this was my final battle. Mm-hmm. And then in February of 2018, they made their decision and I said, I'm out. I thought Travis Park would remove themselves from the Methodist Church, would disassociate. They took the Methodist name off, but they haven't disassociated. And that was my only hope, would they would, and they didn't, and I left. Now, Carrie and I had already talked to Sid Hall that summer before, about what it would take to become UCC. And so that conversation was in the works, in the back of our mind. Yeah. And then at that moment, we contacted the people we needed to. Carrie, you want to talk about withdrawing from?
Yeah, well, and actually when we went to talk to Sid Hall, so it was 2019 when UMC made their...
Okay, 19.
Yeah, I know. Who knows time anymore, right? I can't keep track.
Yesterday was Friday all day, and I couldn't figure out why it wasn't on everybody's calendar.
Exactly. Yeah. But when we went to talk to Sid, we both had this being at Travis Park with the, openness of Travis Park, the reconciling nature of Travis Park. We kind of had this dream of possibly being like a combo church and somehow being an extension ministry of, say, Travis Park UMC in Northwest San Antonio, and anyway, that fell through in 2019, but we'd already talked to Sid about the UCC and it was after February when I decided to leave the UMC, and I had already suspected that was probably going to happen because I knew I didn't have forever to serve. I'm 55. I didn't want the rest of my life to be fighting the UMC. I knew something had to happen now. So I had already looked into the UCC and visited in the fall before that a UCC in San Antonio, and already was in discernment about that. And so I did leave and UCC then, and we both went through their process. I was a member in discernment, actually officially still am. I was approved for ordination, but because of COVID, we haven't actually done the ordination yet.
Part of Texas Association.
Yeah.
And I was transferring my credentials. They asked me, I wanted to leave the UMC, and I was told it's easier to transfer your credentials. So I didn't officially, I was on personal leave. And then the Sunday that I was approved for ordination, or they transferred my credentials, is the day that then I wrote my letter following that to officially withdraw from the UMC. And I want to say too, before I even went to Travis Park, I asked, can't we start through the Methodist Church and a reconciling church in, you know, our area? And I was told, no, that was not going to happen. And Carrie and I both, I knew for a long time, we dreamed of starting such a church in Burning. We knew there was a need. And that's why on that first Sunday after our Pride Walk, the second Pride Walk, when 75 people showed up, we knew there was no going back. Yeah. That our inclination, that urging we had was valid. And we were moving forward. And the UCC, where we faced not only because of our sex, but because of our age and our stance on inclusiveness, the Methodist Church really didn't have a real place for us. And we walk into the UCC and we are validated. We are encouraged. We are said, go, do it. We'll figure it out. We said, the time is now. It's hot. The time is now. And they said, do it.
There was so much freedom when that happened. I was like, what? Why did we wait? I mean, perhaps we waited to know the difference. I mean, to recognize, I don't want to deny any of my experiences because I saw what was and what still is for so many people. And I also got to experience what can be, and amazing.
I've heard Sid express some similar things. I've known him well over 25 years, I think. But
Sid is like our hero because Sid took a stance long before it was even very discussed, and we just have the greatest respect for him. So, and we, there were some, I said a turning point for me was watching, this is so silly in a way, but there was a documentary about Michael Jackson. If you've seen that, I think it's called Neverland or something like that.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And I was watching that and the victims at the end of the thing, spoiler alert, at the end of it, they talk about that Michael Jackson was he was a generous, loving man, and he was a pedophile. And they were both true. And the problem was people kept holding on to this in spite of the fact that he was a pedophile. And I realized in that moment, for me, I had idolized the Methodist Church, seeking their approval, fighting in a system that really had no place for us. Yeah. And I knew then I could let it go. I remember the last time at one final meeting at Travis Park, and I heard an answer. It was similar to what you experienced the day you were preaching. And I was just sitting in a meeting, and I heard this statement, and I said, that's it. So I quietly got up and left, and I'd already taken an official leave, but I flung the doors open as I walked out there, and I was like, I am leaving this behind me. And I want to say that it has been our privilege to be able to start Touchstone in Bernie, and the congregation and the people that have come forth that have validated the need for this in our community, the commonality between us. People would say Lynette Ross, who you probably also know.
Do you
know Lynette Ross? Okay. So Lynette came and spoke to our congregation last fall, and we were having lunch with her, and there's always that conversation about, well, are people just going to say we're the gay church? And Carrie and I said from the beginning, well, if we're not just the gay church, but if we don't have gay people in our church, we have failed, because we are the only place in Bernie for that to happen openly.
It's so interesting. I mean, just from my congregation being there 18 years, we never were anything but predominantly heterosexual couples, families, and so on. I mean, yes, we had gay families and couples with children and so on, and mixes and so on, but it was never predominantly that. I think I remember one service when I looked around, I was like, oh, I think there are a majority of gay people here today.
Right. Well, we're not a majority.
It's one time in 18 years.
Exactly. You know, and Lynette even said, she really put that in perspective for us. And she's like, you know, you have a church that's really good with youth, and they don't say that's the church for youth, or you have, you know, this particular ministry that we don't identify just by one thing. And so we have a very, we worked really hard on our mission and vision statement. You may or may not know this, that we found out like a week, last September, a week before a grant was due, that the CASA grant, that there was such a grant that we could apply for. Carrie and I spent a week. Oh, I don't think we came up for air.
I'm sure you didn't.
Complicated process.
It's very complicated. I thought, we're not going to finish. Oh, yes, we are. Yes, we are.
And we didn't even think we had a chance. But you know what? In about, what was it, Carrie? November, I guess. No, later. Probably January. It wasn't that long because we got
the chance. It was November when we found
it. I guess it was November. We got the letter that we'd been approved. I mean, it was one of those moments where you knew you'd stepped out in faith and hope. And not only now has our association, the Heart of Texas Association, seen the value and the need for what we were doing, but on the national level, we've received a $40,000 matching grant.
That's wonderful.
It was the biggest thrill. And so you can see how grateful and indebted we are to the United Church of Christ for being willing to have a presence in our area. Dr. Longbottom even said they'd been wanting a presence in this area for a while. Yeah. And just in that moment, everything just came together.
That's wonderful.
Wonderful.
Oh, I have so many questions in my head right now. Let me start by going back earlier in your lives. And one of the questions I'm actually asking everyone that I interview is, do you have some formative experiences that you would identify that have shaped you as a minister and your approach to ministry and that have brought you to where you are today?
You want me to go?
Sure.
Go ahead, Carrie.
So I would say yes to that. Oddly enough, I was baptized in the Catholic Church, but when my family got divorced when I was like 5 or 6, of course they were kicked out of the church, and I didn't grow up in a church. So, but my memory of churched people was one of exclusion, and if you don't play the game right, you're out. If you don't act right, you're out. If you don't know the right things, you're out. I mean, all growing up, you know, if I went on a retreat with a friend, it was just, I was excluded. And so that greatly impacted.
Yeah.
When I went into ministry, even as a children's ministry director, I so badly wanted those children to, first and foremost, before they felt a need to memorize any scripture, before they could read, to know that they were valued and loved as children of God, and that they were of sacred worth, and that they had meaning and
purpose. Okay, how did you get into children's ministry from not being in church at all? I mean,
there was a huge gap, but I met my husband, and he was a preacher's kid. And so when my kids were young, my oldest, I have 7, when my 2 oldest kids were young, we started going to a Disciple of Christ church in San Antonio, where his dad had preached.
Okay.
And I had always had a relationship with God. I knew that, but my mind was just, I was a sponge at that point. And so I started helping out with things, you know, didn't know anything, but I was helping out with things for years. And then finally we ended up moving to Bernie, and that was, you know, 10, 15 years later, whatever it was, and found my way at Bernie Church and started helping in children's ministry because I had been leading parents' day outs at that other church and nursery work and all this other. Mm-hmm. And so a position became available and I had already been involved in it. So I thought, well, what the heck? That's how I got it that way.
Okay.
So It was a progression from nothing in a period of 10 or 15 years from really not a whole lot of anything except a strong relationship and love for God that led into children's ministry and the desire for children to begin their life knowing how valuable and sacred they were just as they are. And that was kind of the root of it.
Which is so important. So important. Yeah. And Billy, how did you find your way?
I grew up mostly, not as with a church going family, but taken to church and dropped off often, mostly the Baptist church. So you know what kind of theology I was taught. I wouldn't say I had a love of God. I would say I had a fear of God, mm-hmm. because God was judgmental and it was all conditional.
Where did you grow up?
In Dallas.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I will say, even then, moved to Bernie, left Dallas, moved to Bernie for my husband's job. And at that time, you know, I knew my son. I had 4 children. So my gay son is number 2 child. And I would have told you he was gay since he was 3. But I had a theology that didn't match that. I tell my son all the time that he made me a better person because I had to grapple with some things as he got older. And there was no place, that's what drove me to PFLAG and to intense study. How can I reconcile love of God and love of son? And little did I know, I mean, I began to see the pieces. My youngest son then, I thought, I've seen this before. I think I know where we're going here. Yeah. And so I actually went to a Unitarian church in San Antonio for a seminar, What Does the Bible Really Say About Homosexuality? And that was a life-changing moment for me. I can't even tell you really what the speaker said, but I listened to the people speaking, the parents, the congregation, and I've never felt that kind of love for people before. And I got a very, very, very clear message, probably one of two in my life in the drive home. And it was, love your son. I've got it. Just love your son. And I say that was my most liberating moment. I didn't have to change him. I didn't have to defend God. I was free to love. And that then, soon after my husband was transferred, the company left and moved to Dallas. And I thought, this is my chance to go to seminary. I'd been doing women's ministry because of so many struggles with my son, because of a bout with depression after leaving my home in Dallas for so many years, coming to a new city. You know, just, I was 40 years old. I had lost myself along the way. And I started going to a study at the Baptist church. Beth Moore studies, by the way. I became a very big Beth Moore fan. Now, I would take issue with almost everything she has to say today, but I learned there a way to study scripture in more depth. And so that helped me then make a transition when I had a chance to go to seminary, and I knew there was a bigger picture of God. I knew what I knew, and I knew there was a whole lot I didn't know, and I wanted to go learn it, and I couldn't find anybody down here that was going to tell me. And so that's why I went to seminary, never believing in a million years that I would end up where I am today, but just wanting to learn, like Carrie described, being a sponge. And what I found there was that what I thought was true was true, that God was much bigger and had much more love than I'd ever been taught. And I vowed at that time that I would never let a family sit in a pew never hearing those words. No matter what, I was going to devote myself. That was my passion. So anyway, that's kind of what undergirded it all. It's been a journey, and I understand the people that are stuck where they are, but I believe I was stuck in a bad theology because nobody would speak it. And we know why people don't speak it, because they're afraid people are going to leave or take issue and take their money. We know that. And I was in a very unique position, and I own this, that I had a privilege to be able to speak that without it. It wasn't my livelihood. I wasn't going to starve. My husband, made the biggest living. So that freed me. And it also makes you a little less controllable, I think, in some ways, because you're not afraid to say things. So, come what may, that was the decision that I made. So.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So I'm hearing from both of you that you've had for different reasons, and actually, I guess some overlapping reasons, some very painful experiences in church. And yet here you are, ministers, trying to offer maybe a different experience to others. How is that working during the pandemic? What are you all doing, and what have you done during the last few months as this pandemic has hit and there's been various levels of closures and openings and so on? What has Touchstone been doing?
Go ahead, Carrie.
I feel so blessed in many ways. For one, we weren't tied down to a building. So we were renting a space. Uh-huh. And the space itself had to close because it was like a community hall attached to a retirement center, and a lot of retirees would come for lunch and dinner in this place. So they had to close. So that was not something that had to be a concern of ours. We also have a wonderful community that understands COVID like we understand COVID, and and appreciates that we care for them and that we should care for each other in this process. I will say I'm also very happy that although we can't meet face to face in person, we have managed to keep a lot of our connection going by having worship like this, face to face. We don't record ahead of time. I know that works for so many people, but for us, we come like this. We visit, we share, we, and then, you know, we move on. So we get to at least see each other, and we have some small groups with that as well. So I feel fortunate in so many ways. It was frustrating, of course, having just gotten started.
Right.
I counted up. I think we started week to week in December. We'd actually met face to face 14 times. Now we met in the fall every other week, and we met in the summer once a month. So we built up to weekly, but we had only met 14 times for 14 weeks when the pandemic hit.
So it seems like to me you all have had unique challenges, you know, compared to, you know, congregations that maybe have been established and around for a long time. And how do you feel things are going?
You know what, I don't think, yes, we've had the technology challenges, that's, you know, and it's hit and miss every week. But I tell you, I think we were in a unique position to do new, different things. There weren't, people weren't set in a kind of mindset of, we've always done it this way.
We didn't have any of that. So
no, we were really liberated. And doing this, like we're doing today, and now people see your name and your face instead of just popping in and out on the Sunday and glimpsing each other. We're looking at each other every Sunday. And I think it's been a great connector. We tried to gather some shepherding groups to try to keep up with people. Some are doing better job with that than others, but Carrie and I don't let too much time go by before we reach out to somebody that hasn't shown up in a while. So, you know, and it's easier because we average what, Carrie, you think, 60, 55 a Sunday?
We average about 50 to 55 every Sunday. We have roll call. So we can actually check off the people and see, you know, so I would say in a month's time, we see about probably 70 people.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. It's interesting for me. We made a decision in the middle of 1 week that we can't meet this Sunday. We were trying to follow some of the UCC guidelines that had come down and so forth. And we switched, and we've been doing a Facebook live stream. And so we switched to just that. And then we got the Zoom feature, and we're doing both. And the church has continued to do that. And I saw people coming to the Facebook live stream that had not been in the church building for months. Mm-hmm. Well, this is interesting. And I felt like people were searching for connections and maybe returning to ones that felt familiar. And I don't want to impose that because I haven't actually asked anyone directly if that's what was behind their, you know, participation on the Facebook page. Have you all found that you have people looking for connections?
Definitely. And we've had Dallas people join us regularly now, and friends of our members that live elsewhere, they come on, and you know, and we hope that when we do go face to face, our plan is to keep this up as well, because you know, while there are opportunities where they live to experience it in person themselves, certainly we'll let them know of the places we know of that. But you know, it's just broadened our field so much. I haven't seen, I mean, we miss the people, the synergy and all that. You know, we try to, that's a challenge, I think, to keep things fresh and energetic and where people want to engage with it, you know, instead of just, we haven't lost any enthusiasm along the way. I will say that. I just don't think we have. So
I think that there are people who are like, are we going to get back together again? And We don't see that kind of gathering in the near future right now, especially as numbers are rising again in Texas. But, you know, the minute we say, and I've said this to several people the last couple of weeks, remember, if we're saying, if you're 65 or older, we prefer you not come, then we're not opening our doors, because that is exclusionary. Yeah. That's exclusionary. Now, ultimately, we're going to have to say, it's up to you, but we feel like things are at such a point where we can clean, we can do this, we can whatever, and make it happen as safely as possible. But if we're gonna do it, because we've seen that happen, you know, if you're 65 or older, or if you have vulnerable people, or if you you know, then don't come. And I'm like, well, then it's the church of the privilege, whoever's healthy and young. And
Right. And
how do you do that if you know, I mean, if you know you might be able to wait a little bit longer and provide a safer place for everybody? I don't know. I mean, it's a question, but, you know, it, to me, it feels at this point, if we know the numbers are high and we know it's not where, you know, we had originally said it should be, that we are, we're just not patient enough, you know, and we want to get together. And I don't
want to peer pressure, because there's a lot, I guarantee you, almost every other church in Bernie is meeting face to face again as our numbers start climbing back up. So we just took a wait and see attitude.
Yeah. So once again, you're doing the countercultural thing, huh? Okay, so I actually want to back up to something that I was thinking about earlier and just didn't seem to be a good time to jump in and ask. But you've talked about your families and your children and along the way and some of the influences they have had on you. How do your children feel about you as pastors now? What kind of conversations have you had about that?
Carrie?
Well, I noticed a long time ago, before I even did this, that most of my pastor friends and pastor people, their kids weren't in the church anymore, and I wondered why. And as a children's ministry director, I kind of saw why, you know, families and children saw what happens in the church, the ugly side of church. Mm-hmm. And it was quite a turnoff. So my kids were subject to the same kind of ugly in, internal stuff at church. Yeah. And, however, my kids are, very glad to know that there are people like Billy and people like me who, you know, the church is going to continue. The body of Christ is going to continue. And if there aren't people there sharing the good news as we understand it to be, what will happen? So they're, you know, they're pleased. They're not, some of them will pop in on what we're doing, but, you know, they're also in their 20s and exploring their lives as 20-year-olds will. But they are very grateful that there are churches now that are countering what they experienced growing up.
And my kids, you know, I have a daughter with three young children, and two of my children showed up our first Sunday together. They haven't been back. But that's life for them. You know, my two gay sons don't really want anything to do with the church, just because of the way the church can be. But I will say, even though they don't come, and I think this is true of a lot of people in our area, even if they haven't come, they've expressed interest. My daughter does our accounting work. She's a CPA. So that's great. She didn't have access to our money, but she does manage to make sure we're not being stupid or anything.
Right.
And so that's a gift. You know, that's a gift to us. And she does it because she believes in what we say. And I believe, even though my kids aren't coming, I think they're really proud.
Yeah.
I think they're proud. And I think sometimes there's resentment because it keeps us busy from some things. You know, we have to make choices sometimes. I think they're proud. And I think there's people that would say, my church is Touchstone, even when they're not at Touchstone. I really do.
Certainly had plenty of people that said Church of the Savior was their church. Mm-hmm. And I would hear that and be occasionally surprised. Mm-hmm. Like, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're claiming this church, then yay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it didn't always translate into any kind of regular attendance or, I mean, the participation would be in different ways than, you know, coming to Sunday.
But it does translate into them telling other people.
It does.
Yeah, it does.
That's there's power in that. So, yes.
And, you know, we are in a very unique position. While we don't, you know, endorse any political candidates, we can have really really cutting edge conversation. And we say it's the gospel, which that is what I believe. You know, let's preach the gospel and see where it leads you in your politics. But there's a book out. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called The Purple Zone or something like that. The Purple Zone, Preaching in the Purple Zone. And it's for those congregations that you've got red and blue, you know, and you're trying to find the middle. And we're not in the purple zone. Carrie and I've said we're not. We don't ask, but we know because we see what people show up to. There may be some whose other family members are in the, you know, feel very differently politically. You know, there's just a little. There's a fine line between the gospel and politics, and we know that Jesus was political. So we encourage engagement in politics, and we lay out a godly perspective, we believe. Now, we know the other side would say they have a godly perspective too, but Carrie and I, we fall back on something I learned in seminary, and I know Carrie believes this too. If your interpretation does not lead to justice, mercy, love, then you need to dig deeper because something's off. And so that's our plumb line.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, we've covered a lot of territory here. I'm so appreciative of the ministry y'all have and what you're doing and Bernie. And I've seen a few pictures, I think, on Facebook where I recognize a face or two. Mm-hmm. And I'm very happy to see those familiar faces in there and knowing that some folks have a new home. And I'm just wondering, I guess at this point, is there anything from your life stories that we haven't touched upon that are that's significant for this conversation? Anything that I've left out or anything that you would like to add?
You know, for me, and Carrie can really attest to this as well. I grew up in Dallas in Oak Cliff. I don't know if you know Oak Cliff, but a beautiful, wonderful place to live. But most people, if you said I'm from Oak Cliff, they went, oh. So I had everything I needed and most of what I wanted. I don't want to pretend otherwise.
Right.
But living in the community and the, you know, we were all pretty much, I don't want to say economically the same because even in my elementary school, I'm finding out there were a lot more differences than I was aware of at that time. But we kind of stayed with the same group, all of us growing up. There wasn't a lot of transition back in those days. And I think there's just something about growing up in Oak Cliff, which was kind of a humble place. It has its affluent area where, you know, Stevens Park, where the doctors lived by the hospital and things like that. But it gives you, I was raised with the mantra, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Mm. And so that's deeply impacted my life. It's caused tension in my life when I've had more than I can even, you know, really justify. And so I live in that tension, but I think the tension is good. I think it was good being at Travis Park, doing my internship in Dallas at Grace United Methodist at Inner City Reconciling Church. It changes you and it gives you a heart for people. And I would say, I think that has been the biggest thing even that I see just exemplified at Touchstone over and over and over, is an openness of heart and a commitment to making life more equitable and justice for all people. Of course, that's a UCC motto, and it's just such a great fit for us where we live. And I know Carrie probably can speak to that a lot herself. So, Carrie.
Listening to Billy's upbringing, so I was, you know, raised with one of eight and then having seven children of my own. I feel like I experienced a lot of value in that, in that, you know, when you put that many people together in one space, you have to learn how to get along with people or you're miserable. And so I did have that experience. I didn't have the same, when my kids did not have the same experience, I don't think, growing up in Bernie. I remember my children on a couple of occasions saying, are we poor? because we didn't live in the right neighborhood in Bernie. And having seven children, you know, they weren't going to get a brand new spanking car. They weren't going to get, you know, this wasn't going to happen. And I remember telling them repeatedly, do we have everything we need?
Yeah.
Food, shelter? Yes. Do we have most of what we want? Like Christmas and birthdays, do you get things that you don't normally get? Yes. And I said, do we have a little bit of our heart's desire? Like we dream of going on a camping trip or a vacation. Yes. And I said, we are so far from poor that you you can't even imagine. So no, we are not poor. You may not have a new car, but we are not poor. But living in this community, it was very difficult for them. And actually moving to the Methodist Church, Paul and I, we drove by two Sundays in a row, actually, before we joined it, because I thought, I'm not going to that big white church. And I meant building-wise. It was a big white church, and I had come from a smaller. But we drove past. I said, I need to see how they're dressed. Let's see when they come out of church how they're dressed. Mm-hmm. And because I'm not buying shiny new shoes for seven kids. Ain't no way. And we did. We drove past, and we saw the first time. I can still remember the family. I won't give their name because they're a lovely family. But, man, they were sharp, pressed and sharp. I thought, ain't going to work. I mean, I'll be lucky if they have their shoes on their feet when we get here. And so then we waited, and we looked for other churches. And then we came back another time. I said, let's drive through again. And then I saw, I don't know why I saw it wasn't the pressed family, I guess, but it was, you know, something else. And I thought, well, let's try it. And so, you know, we did, we went in there and we were of course welcomed and received and, loved, but it was very trying to fit into that community. And it was only in the Methodist Church that I started even feeling like I wasn't enough in the, seeing all of the, you know, until I got to know people. And so it was a very difficult and hard learning experience for me and my family and what that looks like to be part of the community in that way. But wow. It impacted my ministry. It impacted when I went to Travis Park because, you know, no one should feel like they're not enough for whatever reason. And in our church in Touchstone, we call it keeping it real. And we do, we just keep it real with each other and whatever our situation is, our life circumstance, our past, we feel free to share it and love that we are who we are because of it. Because I'm everything I am because of all of those experiences.
Well, right. Every place we've been has contributed to where we are now in one way or another.
My son used to tell me, you know, he's like, if we just had a dog and a baby, we'd be rich. And we got a dog and a baby. So he was right. We were rich.
Oh my goodness.
But you know, and all those things Carrie described in this heart thing we're talking about at Touchstone and keeping it real and asking hard questions and having a progressive theology, which is in our mission statement, you know, that we're open and affirming, theologically progressive, justice-seeking church community of faith, and we boldly embody the unconditional love, grace, and mission of Jesus in the world. If we can stick right there, then we are we have a bright future. We also say that we are a place where all belong. Mm-hmm. And all can become fully who God created them to be, and all are beloved. So we focus on that.
That we focus on every week.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great. Well, I'm going to stop the recording now, but I want to thank you all for spending your time with me this morning. This has been a wonderful conversation. I was looking forward to this so much to be able to talk to both of you. And it has proven to be just fabulous. So I'm going to stop the recording part.